Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Vijay Pachaswaran, the energy and climate innovation editor for The Economist magazine, also the author of the prescient book, Power to the People, some decade past, but it's right here in front of us in a headline I'm reading right now. Vijay, a very good day to you. The headline is this: Exxon activist expands boardroom presence with third seat. Subhead: CEO Darren Woods is in the bottom half of director vote totals. In subhead: investors also approve lobbying disclosures opposed by company. The initial counts show the newest nominee from engine number one slate elected to Exxon's 12-member board is private equity investor Alexander Karsner, Exxon said Wednesday in a statement. The results, which still need to be certified, confirmed an earlier report by Bloomberg News. The outcome is a coup for engine number one, reads the report. I'll stop there because I do want to know that word coup seems borrowing geopolitical language. However, right now, a week after the court decision in Europe and now this board vote in Exxon, you mentioned last week, shot heard round the world. So I wonder if what we're seeing here is, we all know Concord followed Lexington, and then there was a lot of shooting as the British marched back to Boston. Are we seeing a lot of shooting? The response in a week, how has it looked in energy? Has everybody lived this change dramatically, or are they in some way denying that it changes anything?
No, I think denial is no longer an option. What we have seen, and it really was a day that will be remembered for quite a long time in the energy world. Last week, the day, first and foremost, where Exxon shareholders, again, let's bear in mind, it's not just about an activist hedge fund. Now, activists have been throwing rocks at Exxon for decades at this point. But Exxon was really the ship of state of big oil. It is the legacy company of the Standard Oil Company, right? Rockefeller's oil company. It is the standard bearer for the petroleum economy. And for more than 100 years, it and its predecessors were the premier purveyors of petroleum in the world and defenders of the way that oil has been used, the way that energy has been used for a century and more. It lost the confidence of its own shareholders. And almost half of Exxon shareholders are mom and pop or ordinary retail investors. That's not true for most of the companies on the S&P 500, which have high degrees of institutional shareholding, the Fidelities and the various other pension funds, Vanguard, State Street, the big ones that we'd all heard of, BlackRock most prominently. And there was a revolution amongst ordinary investors. Typically, when they get their proxy forms in the mail, they throw them out or they ignore them, or almost always they vote with management, especially for a company like Exxon that is very good at providing dividend checks. And so the fact that they got disgruntled and unhappy and sided with the activists means it really is time for the management to change. They've lost the confidence of middle America, of not the environmental fringe, but the broad base of the American capitalist population that says, Exxon, you're on the wrong track.
The report says that the new board member, Karsner, joins Gregory Goff, former chief executive officer of Refiner Andeavor, and environmental scientist Kesa Hitala, Kesa Hitala, whose victories were announced last week. Three board members. What do we believe is their intention? What can three board members do? I understand the people have voted for them in some enormous fashion, but what are the next steps if Exxon is to turn the ship a little bit? Not profoundly, but a little bit.
So it's extremely rare for a company the size of Exxon to have even one dissident activist elected. It's very unusual in American corporate history. But to have three is simply a profound transformation of that board. And so that's just a point to note. This is extremely unusual. It's a big rebuke. It would not surprise me if the chairman was not in his job a couple of years from now, or maybe sooner. It means the possibility of a boardroom coup of some kind, or the separation of the chairman's job from the CEO's job, which is something else that corporate governance activists have argued for a long time at Exxon, becomes a reality. It is mooted that Ken Frazier, the well-regarded CEO of Merck, the pharmaceutical company who sits on the board of Exxon and has been reelected, could provide a good figurehead to be the chairman, for example, with Woods as a diminished CEO, somebody who has at least someone to answer to, some accountability to show that he is listening to the dissidents on the board. So that's something that people are talking about, but it's speculative. The bigger question that you ask, how will this change the way that Exxon behaves, its strategy? I think what we're likely to see is the company go beyond some of the window dressing that it's done on the low carbon front. Thus far, its policies have assumed that there will be a dramatic increase in the company's own investments into digging and developing and finding and bringing to market new oil. That is a very different bet than other oil majors have made. Shell and BP, most notably, the European oil companies, are actually forecasting, in line with official forecasters like the International Energy Agency, that the next 10 to 20 years will see reduced demand for oil, in part because of regulations, environmental regulations and climate regulations, but in part because the market for electric cars takes off much more dramatically. We see a greater penetration, therefore reducing the demand for oil. There's also some related trends, car sharing, some of the platforms like Uber and Lyft. There's multiple trends. People under 40 now have shown reduced interest in owning cars. We put a cover on The Economist a few years ago called it peak car. And the people used to talk about peak oil, meaning the world will run out of oil. That's not going to happen. I spent many years debating the peakists and debunking the theories over the last 20 years. The world is awash in oil. In fact, we're going to stop using oil before we run out of it, the way the Stone Age ended, not because we ran out of stones, but because something else came along that was better. And in much the same way, we're going to start reducing our usage of oil because of alternatives that are better. Exxon did not fundamentally buy that forecast until this board vote. Now I think they're going to be forced to go back and develop some new scenarios and new strategies for how they can still make money and be successful as an energy company and do good and do right by their shareholders in a world in which there is less use of oil and digging up more and more oil in ever more expensive places becomes uneconomic sooner than they had planned.
Let's go to the oil cartel itself, OPEC, because you're reporting in The Economist some decision-making because of the recovery of the global economy, I believe, and that it's driving season or near to driving season. Is OPEC caught surprised by the sudden increase in demand? I see the price is up, and so that must make some people happy, but were they prepared for this? The reason I ask that, Vijay, is because other suppliers were not preparing for the recovery at this time in the second quarter of 21. And therefore, it's said to contribute to the inventory shortages and supply chain delays. Is OPEC caught unaware, or were they ready for a recovery at this speed?
I would say that OPEC has been watching and it has been extremely vigilant in how it looks at the market. Rather than having quarterly meetings or occasional summits as they used to do in the olden days, they're meeting every month by Zoom, given the pandemic. But they're monitoring the markets very, very carefully, and they're reading the tea leaves. And they've spotted that, in fact, in America, thanks to the vaccine and thanks to a revival of optimism, we are moving. We're driving, right? Memorial Day weekend, everybody was out. Even air travel is coming back to some degree. And of course, in China, the economy is back on track. Industrial use of oil as well as driving is back. Even Europe, with its still some of its vaccine hesitancy and some of its delays in rolling out the vaccines, the economy is doing okay. And so they're seeing these trends. They're seeing an uptick in the global economy. forecasts from the IMF for the global economy show that it's meant to do very well this year, again, led by the U.S. growth. And so they're releasing more oil. They had taken an enormous amount of oil off the market. That's the first point to say, right? In the wake of the pandemic, they immediately cut production dramatically, and they're now restoring about half of those cuts bit by bit, month by month. And so I would call it guarded optimism on the part of OPEC as they're watching the recovery. And they want to make sure that they don't get flat-footed. And remember, they have every incentive, right? They want to produce more oil. When they produce less oil, they generally make less money. And so this has been a hard time for their coffers. And so that's why they're so eager to get oil back on the market.
Two talking points for the OPEC virtual meetings until they can gather again in person. One is Iran. How does that change OPEC's picture? I'm presuming this connects to the lengthy talks in Vienna about the JCPOA of 2015.
You're absolutely right. And that was the elephant in the room when OPEC got together this week. There had been speculation that there might be a breakthrough in the negotiations with Iran. And this matters for oil because of the previous friction between the U.S. and Iran. The U.S. has imposed sanctions and therefore managed to reduce, not completely eliminate, but reduce the level of Iranian exports dramatically. And so Iran was expected, if the negotiations had a breakthrough and they were brought back into the fold of countries that do not suffer from U.S. sanctions, that we might very well see a flood of Iranian oil onto the markets. And that would have, of course, affected OPEC's decision on releasing non-Iranian oil to the markets. In the event, there has been no breakthrough, and there are some elections coming up in Iran shortly. It's not clear if a hardliner will win. Maybe there'll be a rupture in the talks rather than a breakthrough. But it's on the cards that there may well be a breakthrough sometime this summer. If somehow that happens, and it's a question mark, then we could very well see sanctions eased and maybe a million barrels a day of Iranian oil make its way to the market by the end of the year. And that would be significant. OPEC would have to take account of that, and other countries would need to make cuts to accommodate, or else if there was a mismatch, we would see prices fall.
There is a second concern for OPEC, and when we come back, we'll discuss that in light of these decisions about climate change and moving away from gasoline engine cars worldwide. The second concern, of course, is America and China might change their demand, and India might not be restored quickly, and Europe could go the way of electric vehicles. All those concerns for OPEC, but also for conversation following the rupture in business as usual at Exxon following the court decision in Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.